Wiggly World 116.
A Wiggly World. Hi, everybody. All right. Hey, I have some time now. I have a little bit of time today. I had two projects to do today. One was to wait for the oven repair person to come, and she did come. The heating element, the bottom heating element of our oven, blew up. It just blew up. It, I guess, shorted to ground or whatever. Here's a little tip for you. If you ever see a very bright spot on your lower heating element, one little bright spot before the rest of the heating element gets hot, pretty soon it's probably going to short to ground. Turns out that even though my oven's relatively new, probably 4 or 5 years old, the heating element in it is like finding gold in a hippopotamus's belly, I guess. It's very rare, and so it has to be ordered, and now, even though I had to wait a week for the oven repair person to come out, and they knew that the heating element was broken, now I have to wait another week for them to order me the part and hopefully get that taken care of. So thank you very much for that. Now, later on in the day, I will be going with Chiz to talk with our mortgage guy, and because we have a house now. So evidently we bought a house, and it's very good. It's what Chizzy wanted. Wiggly is along for the ride here just to try to get us out of the chicken coop. If you don't know, I've been living in a modified chicken coop for the past several years. So the trapdoor chicken coop recording studio will be going the way of the dodo very shortly. A couple months, I guess, till we can get out of here. The new house, I don't think I'll be able to move any of my stuff there, really. I know I'll still have my studio, but I might have to buy one of those dumpsters that you see there, and I'll paint on the side of it. I'll just paint pods, and then just put it in the pod there, and off to the dump it goes. That doesn't really make a lot of sense, because like, I'm the one that knows it's going to just go in the trash. Never mind it. Blew that one. That's what I usually do to my mom. That's what I would do to my mom. I would trick my mom. I would get one of these dumpsters that you rent and then paint pod on the side so she thinks she's putting her stuff in storage, and then instead it just goes to the dump and she never misses it. Hey, and you'll also be very happy to know that according to the newest episode of Core, which has a Dante's Inferno, How Evil Are You DVD quiz upon it, I have been certified. It turns out that I am not evil enough to go to hell, so I will not be going to hell. Now, which hell? They don't mention on there. I guess the one mentioned in Dante's Divine Comedy, but once again, they don't mention that. And, you know, most people that tell you you're going to hell don't mention which hell they're referring to. You know, Totoro, the grave, Sheol, or whatever. They don't even know what you're talking about when you mention it to them. Hey, and we'll have plenty of Jesus today, some wrestling, maybe even some wrestling Jesus, who knows. Lots of good things to talk about. I think I mentioned everything that I needed to about as far as the house. I got that out of the way. It's only been 4 minutes. I'm doing pretty good. The house, the oven, and that's about it. I don't really know what to expect. I'm going along. It's all good. I'm flexible. I'm being like the willow tree, just flexible, blowing in the wind. It would have been great to have that giant seven-bedroom joint in Allentown, but, you know, unfortunately, the taxes were just a little bit too much. So now we are going to be moving to Easton. It's not too far away at all, and it's a little close to the other houses, but you know, it's going to get us out of the coop, and right now, for, like, I guess everyone has their own versions of what we would call hell. And I know that I had heard, you know, back in the 70s that the native Eskimo version of hell was, of course, a frozen ice block tundra like that. And surely that is what this portion of the chicken coop is like. Fortunately, Kyle Von Kubik for the Xmas got Chiz and I a large box of assorted gourmet-type teas to warm us on the inside. And on the outside, I have this giant ceramic thing that you would normally aim at Godzilla to, like, fry him and shoot at him with lightning bolts coming out. I have one of these giant ceramic portable set things on fire if something gets within 2 feet of it, vaporizers. So I have one of these Godzilla guns here on the floor. But I'm fully gloved and double jacketed. So this portion of the coop I have sectioned off, and it's quite chilly. The other portions are not as chilly, and that led, because, you know, Chiz likes it warm. That led to last month's electric bill being $400, twice as much for 1 month, everyone. That's twice as much as what it normally is. But don't worry, plenty of Jesus to come to warm the cockles of your heart and warm cockles. And we'll be talking about being born again today. That's a good subject. And I'm probably going to talk about YouTube a little bit, some action going on there. I was recently on Over the Ropes. It's a radio program that's brought to you every Saturday night. And that was a lot of fun. I'll have a link in the show notes. You could go to the episode. They interviewed me for like 31 minutes. It was fun. I didn't get across all my points, but, you know, you only have a, you know, of course, if I was still doing a pro wrestling program, I guess I'd be going a full 3-hour program like I was long to do. So we'll have that. We'll have this. We'll have a couple other things. Where am I in my thoughts? I have no idea. There's so much, of course, just trying to get caught up. But I promise not to do a 3-hour show today. I think I could blow this out. I might even be able to talk about a couple of movies I saw, talking about a couple of television shows. I think I'll finally be able to draw the analogies to the final episode, the finale of Battlestar Galactica, and I'll do it spoiler-free, I believe, because it's going to be shorter than I thought it would be, so that's kind of nice. But we're in the new year. We're in 2010, according to some. This is very exciting, I guess. I don't know why. Once again, starting our years in the middle of winter makes absolutely no sense. This is all going back to times when people will talk about it, and they will say things. They will say lots of different things. It's just a dumb place to begin our year. It is on one of the solstices, but a more proper place to begin years and end years on the planet Earth would be, of course, when it's summer, or at least spring, when it starts getting warm. Maybe you begin your year then. That might make a little bit of more sense. But then again, you know, you have that southern hemisphere, so things are a little bit reversed. But I'm sure we could come up with a much better time to begin our new year than in the middle of winter and the dead of cold and freezing and, you know, blowing smoke out of it. Because, let's face it, New Year's rotates around New York City. So whatever the temperature is there, that's what we have to sort of go by, I think. And that's only fair. Or at least the mummer. You know, the mummers wouldn't have to be so cold. And speaking of mummers, did you see the newest line of WWE figures? The Rey Mysterio and the Triple H I'm speaking about particularly. I mean, they look like the fancies. Are they in the fancy or in the comic brigades? I don't know. But they are definitely mummers going on there. And let's take a brief 1 minute in wrestling history, because I don't want to bore the people that don't really care about wrestling. I don't know if you saw this, The Rock. I finally think his breakout role is coming. You probably heard of The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, The Rock. Rock's final breakout role, The Tooth Fairy. I think this will be very successful for him. Definitely put him over as one of today's leading men. Mark Henry choosing the same shine as Kelly Kelly did the match before. That was unfortunate for Mark Henry to choose the double Lariat Shine that Kelly Kelly just got done doing in the match before her. And Was it just me, or was it actually one of the better triple threat matches in the WWE in the past few years? It was Randy Orton, John Cena, and Kofi Kingston. I was shocked that I got that type of a pretty well called match out of Randy and Cena there. That was pretty. I mean, it was a rocky start in the beginning. Orton really didn't know where he was supposed to be, what bumps. I think the ref was trying to coach him along. Maybe they thought they had to go to, they were going to go to break sooner than they did, or you know, someone was, I guess, whatever that guy's name is, the champion. I guess that's how much I watch wrestling. I guess Sheamus was maybe supposed to hit the ramp sooner than he did. I don't know. I don't know what was going on there. But then it really got interesting. And, of course, Mike Tyson was the host this past Monday Night Raw. And Tyson hosting Raw was a lot like the television special, The Death of the Incredible Hulk. It had both the best and the worst television could offer all in one, sometimes in one segment. Just how you could see that the lights are on, but no one's home at times with poor Iron Mike there. But then again, then he was sharp as well. The part where he told Hornswoggle that he was going to stick his fingers up his nostrils, pull out his brain, stick it in some paper, hit it against the window like silly putty. I don't know if he's mixing metaphors here. I don't know what's going on, what type of troubled childhood if he didn't know how to use silly putty. Is he confusing silly putty with a gefilte fish and then something else that you do with a window? I don't know. I know that you rub silly putty on a comic, the comic section, it transfers over. But I don't know where the window comes in, where you slap a paper against the window with brains in it. I just don't understand that so much. But I mean, it was amazing, and you know, he's definitely scary because you don't know if he thinks it's real. You don't know, and that's what's very good with Mike Tyson. So it was kind of neat to have him on there. And then of course the ending was just all for the troops. So, but that's all I think I remember about pro wrestling this week. It was a very good. It was a pretty good ROH. I won't say very good. It was pretty good. A lot of neat things happening in ROH now. I really like this pick six or whatever it is, and they're doing good there. Speaking of television, other things on TV, the National Geographic Channel aired The Rivals of Jesus. Now, I don't know how old this is or how new this is, but it was nice to see Apollonius of Tyana get a little bit of, you know, airtime. A lot of people we've talked about on past episodes of A Wiggly World, it was kind of cool. They didn't take any giant leaps here. They still kept saying about a historical Jesus, about when Jesus was walking around, and the historical Jesus was walking around, and this and that, and other with Simon, and you know, Simon's even mentioned in the New Testament, and all this other type of stuff. And Simon Bar Kokhba was even in there. How about that? That was pretty interesting. So that's really neat. What was Simon the Sorcerer's name? Simon Magus, and I think they even talk about Mithras a little bit, but they're like all over the place with Mithras in time. And it was kind of neat because, you know, I just had wrapped the last Wiggly World, and that came on about a week or so after. So it was kind of neat. You know, once again, too much that Jesus was a real person. I'd like to see them take the real step there. I mean, it's good to see some of these people. I don't know who all the consultants were. I would have loved to have seen people like Robert Price and Earl Doherty, even maybe drawing on people as far back as you know, Arthur Drews in the turn of the century, the beginning of the 20th century. It would have been nice for some of that, but you know what, man, baby steps, baby steps. I mean, this is from the same channel that still brings us ghost hauntings and things like this. So just acknowledging that the people that did the same type of things that Jesus was later, you know, painted into his patchwork, which Jesus is a popular mantra. If there's any religious mantra of a Wiggly World show, well, first of all, I would think it would be the mantra of, you know, what's the difference between religion and mythology? And the second one would be, I think, which Jesus? Or even what Jesus? So it's kind of nice to see that on the TV. Also, since last year, Chiz and I watched two of the top 10 rated movies of 2009. Inglourious Basterds, Tards, I don't know how you pronounce that. Inglourious Basterds. We saw that. Oh, yeah, it's pretty good. It's good. Just what you expect from a Tarantino movie, except dealing around a mythologized World War II type scenario, which I love. I love wacky war stories. Those were always some of my favorite DC and Marvel showcase comics and things like this. Anything that had weird war stories. I've often talked about one where I can't recall their name. They were some type of monster squad, but it was actually the Wolfman and Frankenstein's monster and Dracula and maybe the Invisible Man, I think, or something like that, or not a mummy. No, that wouldn't be very good Unknown Soldier. I remember that. He was all wrapped up like a mummy. But no, this was actually from DC Comics, and they were actually, you know, the classic Universal styled monsters without violating Universal copyrights, cast in World War II fighting Nazis and stuff like that. And I always loved that type of thing. And I mean, Showcase Comics had Wild War stories where it was dinosaurs going around with Sergeant Rock type people and things like this. So those are always my favorite. So this Inglourious Basterds was kind of neat. We also saw District 9. We watched District 9 before we saw Inglourious, and even though you can't compare the two, I think we enjoyed Inglourious a little bit more. But District 9, I thought, was pretty tight. I enjoyed it. Wasn't really into the lead character's acting and his role initially, but towards the middle there, I really, really got into it. And really neat. I think a really neat concept in movie making. I really enjoyed it. So that was kind of cool, and I think both of these were, you know, well, I don't know, was Inglourious relevant at all to, or was it just completely style and cool and neat? I think that's all that was, but I think District 9 had actually some substance to it as far as pertinence to things going on in the real world. So that's kind of neat. Also, my magic antenna, I was trying to tune in a couple of other movies that I wanted to see, but I was using my PlayStation. I was trying to watch some movies, and for some reason, the Jennifer's body, what is it called? Someone's body, her body, that the audio was a little bit wacky on that one, so I went through my queue of other horror movies, and we ended up watching The Skeptic the other day, and I was worried about watching The Skeptic. That's why I hadn't watched it sooner, but I gotta tell you, a lot of nice shocks in it. You get a lot of nice shocks in it, so that's good for you and your significant other to get startled together, as long as you have the sound turned up quite some and you can see it, your television and things like this. I think that there's a lot of shocking moments. But I was a little worried about this because of The Exorcist of Emily Rose. That sort of course, leaned completely towards the more supernatural. Even though I think that movie was very, very important because it was a very historic trial, you know, is demon possession and hocus pocus and superstition and, believing in this mythology and things like this, is that defensible for murder in a court of law? And the ruling on that was, of course, no, so that's good. But the way that it sort of played out with the more supernatural elements blown on top of it and prevailing, that was kind of a letdown to me. And by reading the synopsis of The Skeptic and just watching the preview of how the preview was, I don't even think it was a synopsis because I usually don't try to ruin things for myself. But just watching the preview clips for this, it looked like, oh, The Skeptic is going to find out that he's wrong and that, you know, magic is real and there's ghosts and all other types of things that have absolutely zero evidence behind them, despite all the ghost shows on television. Oh, I haven't gotten into that yet because I'm so indignant to it. I can't believe what I've seen. I can't believe what I see. Even in a preview, if I see a preview for one of these ghost things, it's like in the preview, I can point out 5 to 9 things that was wrong about either how they're using equipment, the leaps, their conclusions are so insane. It's like as if an insane person is just, hey, look at it over there in that room. There's a cold spot in that room. I mean, isn't the whole insulation corporations built upon there being cold spots in your house? They wouldn't be in business. You know, we wouldn't see the Pink Panther insulating commercials and things like this if there weren't drafts and other things, especially, oh, we're in an old house and there's a draft in here and listen, it's creaking. Oh my God, you're kidding me. Stop the presses. Call Ripley's. No one's going to believe this. A brick house with a draft. I can't believe it. It hasn't been repointed for 300 years. I can't believe it. There's actually a draft in here. The door shut by itself. Oh, wow, I don't understand anything about air pressure. You know, the room is like at an 8-degree angle. Oh, the ball's rolling down the room. I mean, across the floor. Ay, ay, ay. But I must tell you, I was kind of happy with The Skeptic. It scared the poop out of Chizzy, that's for darn sure. So it's good. And I didn't ruin anything. You know, once again, it's not like it's all a skeptic movie. And I think I love the fact that I think anyone that watches this, no matter what you believe, if you want to believe in magic and hocus pocus, then I think you'll be satisfied. And if you don't want to, if you're a more rational minded person and like to live in reality here, I think you'll be quite pleased as well. And I don't think it takes away any of the shocks. So it's all very good. Now, it's not a gore fest, you know, it's nothing like that. You know, I enjoyed it. So there you go. And one thing that I did promise you, I told you that I would get together with Chiz over the one weekend there, and we would try to answer some of the questions that we had from your letters, and that did not happen, of course. It's been more than busy around here, and I apologize for that. The if you didn't know, the We Talk Games was going to be around a 6-hour show, the one for December. So I had to, you know, on the fly, figure out how I was going to do it, release December show without it being a 2-part show, because I hate 2-part shows. So I physically thought, as I was editing and realizing that this is going to end up to be a 6-hour show, I figured out, well, at least a 5-hour show or something close to that. That's what it looked like to me. And I didn't want that to happen because that's just way too long. So, and like I said, I don't like a part one and a part two of any podcast because I never listen to a part two. I listen to part one and that's it. I'm like, I got enough. I get the idea, I guess. Maybe. Even if the greatest thing can happen in part two. So what I did with We Talk Games was I split it up into 2 shows, and it actually was 2 shows. I recorded the shows on 2 days. And I divided our special guests with, I put the indie game developers on the first day of December 22nd, and then, of course, created a whole holiday, the 2 days of December 22nd, which I'm sure most of you all celebrate. And then on the second day of December 22nd, which, of course, was December 23rd or December 22nd-B, I released the one that had the more people that were in line with video game fame. We had Steve Wiebe, from the King of Kong fame on the 11th episode of We Talk Games, and we had Stuttering Craig from Screw Attack. So that was kind of neat, and I thought both shows were very, very strong. So I thank everyone that's involved with We Talk Games, and I really, really love how that show is coming out. It's great, because I think there's a lot in there even for non-gamers, if we could just somehow let people know about it. Because, I mean, I do try to make it something different. I do try to marry theater to it, you know, in between the important bits. The important bits are the correspondents calling in and talk about what they've been playing, why they've been playing it. And, you know, if you haven't played video games in a while, you might want to check out this show, We Talk Games. Just go to wetalkgames.com. That's how easy that is. Our name is our address. Just go there and, you know, check out one of these episodes and see if it floats your boat. Because I definitely, it's, you know, I try to keep it interesting. I try to keep it entertaining. And I can actually listen to it. And I think that's very important. I don't think that it is a show where we just sit, oh, the PS3 sucks. Oh, that game sucks. Oh, this game sucks. And this, you know, I think that we, for the most part, we're pretty positive about most of the things we talk about. Because why would we want to talk about things we really don't care for? But when we do talk about things that we don't care for, I hope that we, you know, try to mention why we thought we would care about it, and at least try to be, you know, intelligent or entertaining about talking about these video games. Because, let's face it, we spend so much of our time, we waste so much of our lives dedicated to these video games, people that play video games. I mean, that's just so much of our lives. I hope that we do really care about it. I hope we do really like it. And finding, even though you might not know who some of these guests are, I don't know who Greg Maletic is. Well, I just played, just started playing the Shattered Memories, the, what do you call it? Silent Hill, not Greg Maletic, Tom Hewlett. But Greg Maletic was, of course, the pinball fella that did Tilt, the Battle of Save Pinball. So, you know, you might not know who these names are, but I just saw Tom Hewlett's name, you know, bold as day when I started playing this Silent Hill game. But you might not know who these people are initially, but that's what, if you did know who they are and you knew everything about them, why would I have them on my show? You know, we have people on our show, so we do know about them, what goes into these games, and maybe become interested in what they do. If we've never heard of any of their products, maybe we'll become interested in it or find something interesting and learn together. And I really enjoy that. I love learning new things. Speaking of learning new things, speaking of getting back into the religiosity of this podcast, exploring religion, exploring our world, exploring reality, exploring, you know, just asking questions. I think that's what the whole premise of A Wiggly World is making observations, commenting on our observations, and knowing what questions to ask. I think that's makes me content. That's for sure. Being aware of my environment, being aware of that, not taking myself out of my environment, which would be foolish, and considering the environment when we talk about these things that we revere and don't consider mythology, even though. Clearly, if you lived during these times, you would realize that these are just stories or made-up things and nothing to really separate mythology from religion. So, first, let me apologize for not getting your letters. Believe me, I've read them. I'm concerned about them. And like most things that are very important to me and close to me, they usually get taken care of last. You know, it's always more superficial things that get rushed out. Speaking of the Chigara Podcast of Go-Go, we're almost up on 200 episodes. And that, I'll tell you what, you know, like I said, I say this quite often. Just doing the Chigara Podcast of Go-Go every week and making 200 weeks of a video podcast happen like clockwork every single week for 200 weeks, that is enough of a job in itself. I could do that and feel content. I've accomplished something. But, you know, we try to bring you more. I try to bring you more. I try to, I surely appreciate you being here. And I wish I could even give you more and more and more than I can right now. Unfortunately, working my tech job is very, very time consuming and very stressful at times. Other times it's okay. You know, it's cool. Other times it's very good. But sometimes it's very stressful and it's very hard to do anything else where I would have to think. So that does put a pinch on things. Also, my bipolar disorder has been really flaring up. I have got to get to see a psychologist, a psychiatrist, and whatnot, and maybe start some meds up and things like this, and try to get a little bit more stable. It's been kind of bad. I've been a little bit out of control, and with my my thought, mostly because, you know, when I'm tired, it's hard to wrangle in and know where I'm at when you got these other things fighting against you that are beyond your control. But I've been reading, hey, another really great series that was on television. What is this called? Boy, that was good. This Emotional Life on PBS. First, let me warn you, it is 3 2-hour episodes, and for some reason, these 2-hour episodes seem longer than any other 2 hours you will sit through. They seem incredibly long. This is a very, very long series, but it is full of so much good stuff that it really, if you have any type of emotional problems, depression or anxiety or bipolar disorder or whatever, it's good for you to watch this, I think. Post-traumatic stress disorder. And things like that. So it's very good. And if you're a family member of someone that has something akin to that, some type of neurological, some type of brain things happening, or just anxiety and depression and whatever, it's good for you to see this, get a better understanding of what's going on and what's going on in the medical field relating this as well. So it's very good. Really appreciate that type of programming. It's a great series, but hard to make it through, even though it's very compelling. The other thing is, if you notice, if you stop by wigglesworld.com lately, you might notice that I've done away with all of the monthly subscriptions. I just no longer can take seeing the same people, and I've contacted everyone. Hopefully you got your email. Oh, and thank you very much, Storm Tamer, for the extra $10 after I mentioned about that fund thing for the new Mac. And boy, is it working great, man. I got to tell you, when I edit the Go-Go's now, it's like, wow, it's actually a pleasure. It's not arduous and waiting and will it work? Will things crash? So it's very nice to be editing the video now. You know, it ended up costing me a lot more than I hoped it would have, but boy, what a payoff really in this quad core Mac Pro now. But I stopped those monthly subscriptions because I just couldn't take every month seeing people that were just as poor as me, if not poorer, you know, as being the only ones really supporting me. And it was just too much, and it was too, you know, I mean, I'm not well off now. I mentioned on the last show how much I made 2 years ago. And especially now that we are going to get a house, it's very scary. I don't know if I don't know how things will be. It's going to be very, very difficult. But I'm ready to just try it on my own. I don't know if I mentioned last episode, because I didn't hear the playback in quite a while, that I did one project. I did a voiceover product of the USA. And for that, I got $500. That's amazing. You know, if I could do more voice work, somehow get some samples out there, I think I'll be happy. I just recorded Chiz the other day doing a jingle, but now I haven't heard back from the person that we did the jingle for. It was, you know, it was some work, And we haven't heard back, so I don't know what's going on with that. But that was an unpaid one, but it might lead to more. And I'd love to be able to get out there and make jingles and do things like that. Now, I know that my time that it took me to do the product of the USA and then compress it down, shrink the size down to make it still the same 30-second spot was not worth $500. But that sort of made up for my 4 or 5 years of podcasting, for pennies on the hour. So that's nice. It's really cool when you get paid. Now, I ended up saving that company. I ended up saving that company, like $1,200, because they would have had to recut the entire commercial. They would have had to get all the talent back in, the engineers, the producers, everybody, and all that. So I ended up saving them a lot of loot, but making a lot of loot. So that's good. But the problem is repeating that, of course. No one knows to come to me for anything like that. So I have to try to put together some type of portfolio of audio clips that things I'm capable of doing and that are not magic suck will connect you, because that might not go over so well. So that happened. I did away with those, but I still left up the standard, donate when you can, any denomination that you can, if you can. And that would be greatly appreciated. I'm still very frugal with what I spend. I only try and everything that let's put it this way. I can't think of anything I purchased over the past maybe 6 months or more, except for gifts for other people, for Chiz and my mom and stuff like that. But I can't think of anything really I purchased, maybe even last year. I can't think of anything that I purchased that I can't write off, because fortunately, everything I do, video games, shows about video games, the podcast of GoGo, everything that I purchased, except for maybe a couple things for my wedding, everything I purchased, I could pretty much write off. And that's another thing I'd like to do. I actually got a DJing job out of DJing my own wedding, so I'm going to be the DJ for Mass Commentators, Rygar's sister, Mass Commentators' daughter, Rygar's sister. So that's really cool. I'd like to explore those options as well, going out and, doing a DJ, maybe once a month or something, special event. That would be kind of nice to MC, and not a real DJ MC, but I would like a little DJ rig. That would be nice to be able to mix my songs better live when I do the live Chikara events and stuff like that. I think we're caught up. Let's talk about your eternal soul, shall we? Now, I know that no one's ever seen the eternal soul. And I know that the soul cannot be measured. It has no weight. And I know that we can't hook up any type of electronic devices to, interface with the soul. But why believe it doesn't exist, even though there's absolutely zero evidence ever in the entire history of mankind that there's a soul? Why dismiss it just because there's absolutely no proof of a soul ever, and probably never will be, because it doesn't make any sense to have a soul? When you are anesthetized, when you have an operation, most everyone's probably had some type of anesthetism at some point, if that's a real word. And when you go out, you're out, and your soul doesn't keep on doing things, go home and balance your checkbook and do your taxes while you're out on the operating table. Your soul doesn't perform the operation on you while, a doctor could just knock himself out or herself out. I'm full of burps today. Pardon me, burps, by the way. A doctor could just anesthetize themselves and perform the operation on themselves, and if their soul could do all these things. When you're out and brain activity ceases, your soul doesn't continue on. Your soul is in your brain. Now, some people have the near-death experiences. Well, they're not unconscious. Some people have memories of floating above themselves during an operation and things like that. But those things happen pretty much in an instant, and they're pretty much going to only occur during a hypnopompic or hypnagogic state. They're in those brief moments before you go. When your brain has zero activity, then you have no activity. That's all there is to it. You cease to be. When your brain is back online, then guess what? You're back online and you exist again. So, you have to really, and we're getting to places right now our equipment where we can measure things pretty well, very well, as a matter of fact. And, these EKGs and EEGs and KGBs and BJs, they all work together, and we can really get a good picture of things, as far as emotions and where emotions happen and the disconnect between our rational mind. And I talked about it a little bit on last episode, especially dealing with things like free will. It's just so it's ridiculous. To even talk about free will, first of all, it's not free, as we mentioned, and then second of all, we make most decisions before we even get a chance to think of them. I mean, the frontal lobe is all the way at the top of the brain, right behind our forehead. The cerebellum is connected right to the brainstem; it's right on it. And even the temporal lobe is, closer to those other parts of the brains that just, bang, happen. I don't even know where I was. I get so distracted by myself. Oh, yes, I was talking about our soul, right? So in there, I don't know where our soul is. I haven't seen a diagram yet that shows a map of the brain, or even if you think it comes from our heart or something like that, I guess. I've yet to see, the atrium, the ventricular, the conjugular, and the soul. And I haven't seen that, the lungs, cilia. I love cilia. So mucousy. So let's talk about our eternal soul, as mentioned in the good books. And before I do, I just want to get in a little bit. I don't know if you know about this cat or have heard about him or follow things on YouTube. YouTube is not... I'll tell you what. If you want to test your patience, go to YouTube and read anything about religion, tolerance, racism, ethics... especially religion, anything dealing with religiosity. Go to a Christian's website or something inside of YouTube, and you can test your patience. That is without a doubt, by reading comments or even watching the videos. But there's this dude, Venom Fang X, and he's back. He's not back. He's filing digital rights infringement acts, and he's basically become a Sue Pussy for quite some many years now. This has been going on and off. He came back on, and first let me tell you about this kid. If you're not aware of him or his back and forth, or being fodder for Thunderfoot or anything like this. If you don't, these names are all strange to you. Then you haven't obviously got sucked into this human soap opera online. In fact, there was even a murder that happened involving one of Venom Fang X's supporters, and talk about insane dramas, but. To be honest with you, I don't know how else some of these things could end up. But this is a disturbed kid. He's a disturbed kid. He has some social problems, no doubt about it. And he's exactly the type of person that you fear. First of all, speaking of Mike Tyson, now there's Mike Tyson. When you see this unstable guy on television, he's twitchy and everything like that. You're like, that guy needs some religion. He needs something that he has to believe something mystical, mystically bad will happen to him if he does bad things. He needs religion to keep him in check. You know what I mean? Like, you hope that that guy has a mythical belief system, because otherwise he might just, you know, go nuts and just start murdering, ripping people's heads off and stuff like that. Well, this on a non-joking side, you know, this kid, he's the exact type of personality you would hope wouldn't get a hold of some of this stuff. But he's very easy. He's very easy to the skeptic community. He's very easy to the atheist community, or whatever that is. But he's very easy to them, people like Thunderfoot and everybody else, because he's a great target. Because he's so easy. Because all he is, he's a track sheet. He really doesn't think for himself very much. He'll just read a track sheet, a Christian track sheet, mostly born again evangelical type of bandwagon. And he'll just repeat it back verbatim, and or this Trent Hovind, I don't even know how to pronounce his name. Yeah, Kent Hovind, Dr. Dino. You remember I talked about Dr. Dino not too long ago. Well, he, you know, I guess he's still in the prison, but he's sort of like this role model for this kid. And so you can see that Venom Fang X would just watch one of these DVDs of Kent Hovind, or maybe even a YouTube video or something, and then just take it and run with it. And that's good, because he sort of gathers up all the crap that and same old arguments. So it's a repository in one place where you could go after and start knocking down these arguments, or taking a closer look at these arguments, you know, boom, 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 because he's a great repository, because all he does is repeat back what he's gathered from these other areas. And he, you know, he really doesn't think about what he's saying, and doesn't really do any research outside of the same places where Kent Hovind would probably look for research. In other track sheets or evangelical material. So it's quite easy to stack this up and blow it away. Well, he came back and he posted this video on YouTube about how, you know, he's back, and here's his now he's in this college for other like-minded individuals. So I made a comment, because there were people saying, I don't even know what they were saying. It really doesn't matter. But I started it, I believe, and I tried, believe me, anytime I step off the curb into the YouTube comment arena, it is an exercise in futility. But I stepped off the curb one week, 2 a.m. wee hours of the morning. And I started out by saying something like, blessed is he who apes for the camera. Because, you know, every video he produces, the camera, his face is right there. It is completely not Sermon on the Mount. But then again, you know, many times Jesus is definitely not Sermon on the Mount. It's the whole thing. Which Jesus? Are we talking about the Jesus that was forgiving, turn the other cheek, all the other cynics' staples of their kindness towards other, be a brother? Or is it the Jesus that is going to come back with fierce retribution and separate the wheat from the chaff and destroy and send people to hell? You know, which Jesus? Is it the magician that exorcised people and taught his followers to exorcise demons in his name? Or is it the one that got baptized by John the Baptist? Or is it the one that said, yes, I allowed you to baptize me, and I am the person that performed the miracles. I am the one that you prophesized, John. Which Jesus are we talking about here? So which Venom Fang X are we talking about here? But Venom Fang X will often talk about, you know, he ended on Merry Christmas and stuff like that. So I was like, you know, there's another problem. I mean, how can you be a serious student of the Bible and then say Merry Mithras to everybody? It just makes no sense at all. Only the heathens celebrate the date of their own birth, think they're so important. And only, I mean, who would be sticking their face in the camera like this and mugging and aping for this and thinking themselves so self-righteous? He definitely has some psychological problems. But the people that write in and say Merry Christmas back to them, that's who I was more talking to, you know. And I can't even recall the exact tangent I went off on. But anyway, that video was gone the next day. So I was like, well, I don't know, maybe I had something to do with it. No, you know, impossible. I know that I didn't have anything to do with it. This is just one of his cycles, and I'm really not trying to get on him, but I'm just trying to draw this into some of the beliefs that we talk about when we talk about people that are consider themselves born again. He definitely considers himself that the only way to heaven is through the Son, Jesus Christ, and preaching the gospel of Jesus, and that you will go to hell, and that is your choice. He said many, many things. The Holocaust was retribution for God's children that decided not to accept the Savior, and you know, many, many outrageous things. And he is not, these aren't things that he sat and contemplated. These are things that exist out there that are representative of a evangelical track sheet, born again, Hovland and Banana Man, Coconut Guy, you know, all these things are exists out there, and they are in people's belief systems. And I realize there is absolutely nothing that I could ever say, and there's nothing that Thunderfoot could say. There's no debate. That Comfort Guy, Roy Comfort or whatever, that's another one, the Banana Man. There's nothing that anyone can say. There's nothing that Thunderfoot could say. Thunderfoot presents himself incredibly calmly, incredibly rationally, and that's why it's so frustrating, because, you know, he's actually doing it with care. And, oh, another thing that this fellow said was that, this Venom Fang X was that, you know, atheists never admit that they're wrong. They always believe they're right. I've never met anyone that was afraid to admit they were wrong. Maybe on a certain topic, sure, if there's like some type of pride or thing like this in it. But I've never met anyone that said that they've never made a mistake. You must be hanging out in the wrong circles. Of course, if you believe in a dogmatic state and a dogmatic belief system, then you can't admit you're wrong, because you're getting your information from someone that is never wrong, and that's what dogma's all about. And he also, you know, comes on and says, I used to be an atheist. I used to be a skeptic and all this. I was like, oh, Jesus, really? Anytime that anyone's ever said, I used to be a skeptic or I was skeptical, I've never heard them follow that up with any proof that they actually did anything that had anything to do with being skeptical. It's always just to shill something else. It's always the Doubting Thomas role. It's that literary vehicle of being a Doubting Thomas. Of course Thomas didn't believe in Jesus. He needed somebody to say, I don't believe in you. Oh, and now I believe. It's a literary device. And every infomercial that you see has a Doubting Thomas. I was skeptical at first, but then I tried it, and wow! It's great! I was at home, sitting at home, and thought, I could never do that. And I did! I'm just like you, everybody! Come on, buy my thing! Well, I used to be religious, but now I'm not. Because I'm not. No, the reason that I'm not, I don't follow the Bible anymore is because I was really interested in what the Bible had to say. I wanted to know the Word of God. I wanted to know what was real. And I continued to study the Bible. And I became a member of the Ambassador Bible Correspondence Course. And the more and more I read about the Bible, I was like, this is not what I was being taught in church. And then I joined other little groups, Bible study groups, and I went with the Jehovah's Witnesses and went to their little kingdoms and everything else. I wasn't a Jehovah's Witness, but I wanted to hear what they had to say because they seemed like they cared about what was in the Bible. And then I slowly began to see that, wait a minute, they're charging for their track sheets and whatever, the Watchtower. And then they later stopped that after I questioned why they were charging for that. It didn't seem very biblical to me to charge for the truth. The more and more I learned about it, the further I dug and finding out the roots of the Bible and finding out that, wait a minute, you know, hey, listen, no matter where you, what you believe, if you believe anything, there are no less, no matter what you believe, if you believe the most popular thing on earth, there are no less than 2 billion people that will tell you you are incredibly wrong and that they are right. No matter what you believe, there are 2 billion people that will disagree with you vehemently and, you know, maybe, you know, throw a shoe at you or something. Because there's only 2 billion Christians. Now, when you try to get into the hundreds of sects of Christians, you have all that infighting, but I'm not even talking about that. There's 5 billion people on earth, right? So there you go. There's 3 billion people that don't agree with you. And this all leads into what I was talking about on the last episode, my first forte into YouTube retort. And shows just how impossible it is to try to, and I'm not trying to change anybody's mind. I already come with no preconception that I could ever do that ever. And that has never been my intention to ever change anyone's mind. I learned early on that I cannot change anyone's mind. This was when I was dealing with prejudice and things like this and writing songs that would finally culminate, I think, with Trap Rap. With, you know, how can you base pride upon color? Color is a product of a father and a mother. On the subject of race, you have no control. Have pride in the mind, not in flesh and bone. You know, you're not responsible for... there. You had nothing to do with the fact of whatever race, ethnicity, creed, or color you come out as, or sex, or anything else. You had no control over that. Your parents had coitus. They screwed. Whether they were horny or rape or any other methods there between, a test tube or whatever. Someone decided to mix the lime with the coconut. And there you are. You had no control over that. So, you know, I realized that I can't just go out and say, don't do it. You know, that's not going to do anything. I set by example. And if people find it an admirable quality, then perhaps they will adopt it or not. And I really have no control over it. I don't care. I can only be the best me I can. Venom Fang X also says that, of course, atheists cannot have love. They have no love within them. Yeah, I mean, he's just a silly, disturbed kid, and I don't really want to talk about him anymore. But last episode, I talked about my digression into the banging my head against the wall. And the comment was that the reason that God doesn't talk to everyone at once is because he wants us to have free will. And all I pointed out was that that is absurd. What does free will have? How do you draw the correlation How do you show causality between knowing that a God exists by him speaking to us all simultaneously, or she, or whatever, and free will? How does that interfere with free will at all? And of course, the analogy I always make is that, and we all know, smoking kills you. Smoking kills over 50% of its customers. I heard as high as 80%, some type of complications or other type of ailments. And yet we know that it kills us, and yet you can go outside of any building at any given time and see someone puffing away and lighting it up. It doesn't matter if we know what is good and what is bad. That doesn't influence us at all. It doesn't interfere with free will, knowing that something exists. I mean, here's the conversation. Hey, everybody. This is God here. Hi. How you doing, first of all? It's great to be here. It's great to be here in all your minds. Just want to let you know that I'm here. And now I know I'm everywhere and I'm a God of everything, but I just wanted to let you know that in one of your years' time, now, I know I'm a world, I'm a universal God, so I don't really, you know, do the time thing like you do, because every planet, it's just like I told the people that wrote the Bible, every planet has their own measurement of time based upon them going around their sun in the middle of their local universe. It's just like I told them, and every galaxy goes around. No, I didn't tell them anything. I just sort of left them to try to guess for themselves. But that's besides the point. In one of your year's time, I will come back here to judge you. I'm going to judge you all. So now I know that I've told you through my prophets. Why I have to use prophets, I have no idea. I could just do this, every day, anytime I wanted to. But through my prophets, I told you that you would not be judged by your deeds, but only by accepting my son, which was kind of dumb for me to send my son and then just kill him, who was me, by the way, and then born in the flesh. But that's, I don't want to get off track, because I'm a little bit schizophrenic, you know. But you will be judged by your deeds in a year's time, even though I said you wouldn't be judged by your deeds. But I said I'm kind of crazy, so I don't really know what I say one time after another. And by the way, all the women that I'm talking to, I'm actually not talking to you, I'm talking to the men that have to pass this on to you, because women, your only chance for salvation is through bearing children. And by the way, women, shut your mouths. You cannot preach in the synagogues or the churches or anywhere else. But you can preach in there. Like I said, I'm kind of crazy. So, but I'll be back in a year to judge you, but I don't judge you on your deeds. I'll be judging you, and then I'll kill you because I'm loving. This is God. Peace out. Now, how would that influence our free will? This doesn't impact free will at all. In fact, it would be only loving and caring for God to tell us which God he is and what we should be doing, because we're wasting our fucking time just farting around here not knowing. And so, you know, I told this person not all that business about all the other inconsistencies, and not inconsistencies, not straight out contradictions in the Bible, 1 Timothy to 2 Timothy, you know, night and day. You know, don't leave us hanging here. It would only be kind and considerate, because like I told you, there's at least 2 billion other people that would believe we are adamantly wrong, and that their way is the way. I mean, who's to say that if you're going to get pregnant and the man climaxes first, you will have a boy? If the woman climaxes first, you will have a girl. Yes, that is the Muslim belief. And you have to believe that, because if you don't, then, of course, you are transgressing against the belief. And guess what the punishment for that is? The same thing that it is in the Bible. If you, if you're gay, then you got to get stoned. If you wear cotton and polyester, then you have to get stoned to death. If you eat shellfish, you have to be stoned to death. These are just, you know, good things to live by in the Bible. This is a good word. This is a good book. It's not so good. But telling us what we should be doing is just being considerate. If I was going to go to my friend's house in a week time, and I knew that I was going to go into his house in a week time, and if he didn't paint me a picture of a smiley face, I was going to shoot him in the head. And I knew this a week prior to going to his house and shooting him in the head if he didn't paint me a smiley face. And I didn't tell him, I wouldn't consider myself a very good friend. Because only a good friend, his good friend would tell his friend that he's going to shoot him if he didn't paint him a smiley face. I mean, that's a horrible example. But, you know, it has nothing to do with free will. My friend could either do it or not. And, you know, maybe he's going to have a bazooka when I go over to his house to shoot him. I mean, it doesn't interfere with free will, knowing about a God is real. And, of course, the person wrote back to me, but God don't tell us to his book. Do his book and do his tongue. I don't know if you saw this, the Kindle. I don't know if you saw a cell phone. I don't know if you saw all these other things. A book. I got to read a book. And by the way, did you know that Jesus didn't write the Bible? I mean, nowhere does it say Jesus wrote the Bible. And you might say that, well, that's because it's inspired by God, and he wouldn't do that. But the problem is that we know that Moses wrote the Pentateuch, right? Because he says he did. He even wrote up to the part where he says, and then I died, and then I was swept away to never be seen anymore. Now, I don't know how he wrote that when he was dead and swept away, but the Bible authors, the authors of people that wrote the different letters and the different segments and the different books, what we now consider books of the Bible, they are written that they sign them, and I am Peter, and I am writing this, and this is me saying, you know, they and, which is completely bizarre, but that's what they go through. They do. Now, I know Moses didn't write the Pentateuch, because it's silly. I mean, even writing after he's swept away and gone. You know, but that's what the Bible does. If we're to judge this book upon what is written in it, if this is the inspired word of God, then we have to judge it by what's in that book. Meaning that God came down looking for Moses in a tavern one day, came in the door, just like you or I would, looked around, says, where's Moses? I want to kill him. And his wife takes a knife, cuts off Moses' baby's schmegma, sticks it on Moses' feet or his own wiener, whichever you want feet to mean. And then God says, oh, well, you are the, now I won't kill you. You know, you have to believe everything that's in there. Or not. But that's what I mean. You can't say this book is insane if you read it. And anyone that really does read it and says that this is the inspired word of God has a problem. Now, we get hung up on the Bible in the United States of America. Most people probably don't realize that many Christians around the world aren't really that concerned with what's in the Bible. They just believe in Jesus, much probably like many of the, you know, first Church of Jesus Christ, or whatever you want to call it. Much like the first Christians, they probably are more in tune with them. Once we start getting these books involved, we have a problem. It's like, you know, Zen Buddhism. Once you write down the law, and now people find ways around the law. That's what our whole judicial system is based around. We wouldn't have lawyers if our law, you know, people couldn't start finding loopholes in it. And that's exactly how the Bible, I mean, I find the Bible a fascinating read. That's why I got so interested in the first place. But it's certainly full of just people with their own agendas writing down whatever they like. And I want to really get into more of the things dealing with the Christ our Lord and which Jesus and stuff like that. But I'm going to have to save that until I really know my business in that. The important thing I wanted to take a look at this day is being born again, because as Venom Fang X and many other people are mentioning about going to hell, and that's the other thing. I mean, how can you say that you still have free will? Well, you could choose not to. You can choose to go to hell then. You know, that's the same as saying that if you're saying that the wages of sin is death, and that if you don't accept Jesus, you're going to burn in hell, that somehow doesn't taint free will? You're not being real with yourself. But let's talk about being born again, because born again, hell, and all these other things are quite common in things that you might get shouted at you as you walk down the street. And we've already talked about hell. If you don't know about all the things I did on hell, look up the show notes on previous episodes of Wiggly World, because I go into, to the best of my ability and knowledge and stupidity, all the places where, you know, there really is no hell in the Bible as far as where people will go and burn eternally and everything like that. There's all different words that are translated into the English word hell from different parts of the Bible that all mean something different. They're just translated into one word, hell, and that's where the problem lies. People think the Bible was either written in Latin, if you're like over 50, or they think that it was written in English, in, you know, ye old English. But that's not the case. You know, as you know, the original Bible was written in Hebrew, the New Testament was written in Greek. But as we shall see in this story about Nicodemus talking to Jesus, the physical person, we shall see that although it was written in Greek, we have another problem here. And that is the passage about being born again. This is where the whole thing, you got to be born again. You got to be born again. I'm born again Christian. Let's look at John's Gospel, John 3, 1 through 10, 3, 1. Now there was a Pharisee named Nicodemus, a leader of the Jews. He came to Jesus by night and said to him, "Rabbi, we know that you are a teacher who has come from God, for no one can do these things that you do apart from the presence of God." Jesus answered him, "Very truly, I tell you, no one can see the kingdom of God without being born from above, or born again, depending on your translation." 3:4, Nicodemus said to him, "How can anyone be born after having grown old? Can one enter a second time into the mother's womb and be born?" Jesus answered, "Very truly, I tell you, no one can enter the kingdom of God without being born of water and spirit. What is born of the flesh is flesh, and what is born of the spirit is spirit. Do not be astonished that I said to you, you must be born from above or born again. The wind blows where it chooses, and you hear the sound of it, but you do not know where it comes from or where it goes. So it is with everyone who is born of the Spirit." Nicodemus said to him, "How can these things be?" Jesus answered him, "Are you a teacher of Israel, and yet you do not understand these things?" So what we have here is Jesus saying that you have to be born again. And Nicodemus gets confused. "What do you mean? I got to climb up my mom's cooch? What are you talking about? I'm old. I'm not going to fit up there." Although I have seen a video on YouTube where, and not on YouTube, I guess on PornTube or something else, where it looks like that happens. Yuck. So here we are with the whole born again thing. This is where people draw all the must be born again. The Greek word in contention is anothen, which can either mean from above or anew. So born anew or born from above. And John is also, John often uses these double entendres. His writings are wrote with it. The only problem here is that just as this Pharisee is confused about this double entendre, as are anyone that says that they are born again, because they're not understanding that, you know, what this means. That double entendre, that twist of word, being confused and say, do I have to climb back up in the womb and stuff like that, only works in the Greek. And Jesus spoke Aramaic. At least that's what the historical Jesus is supposed to have spoken, right? Well, the fact that Nicodemus approaches him and says, Rabbi, that's telling me that this is in Aramaic, that he's calling him his teacher. And in other parts of John, we have Cephas, we have Messiah, and all these other words that are from the Aramaic. So that leads me to believe that this double entendre can only work in the Greek. Now, was Cephas from a Greek type of background? That's possible. But the problem here is that the whole born-again business and the whole fact that Nicodemus is having a problem, and he's having a problem with the double entendre of Jesus' response. Jesus says that you must be born again. But he does not mean that you climb back up in the womb or even like spiritually, you know, cleanse yourself off and now I'm with Jesus, now I'm born again. He corrects Nicodemus and says, no, not that type of being born again, but being born from above. You must be born from above. Now, how does one get born from above? Who knows? It doesn't say. Jesus doesn't iterate on that. But that is what it's all about. It's about being born from above. Now, many of the early church fathers have taken this and put it into, you know, being baptism and whatnot. But believe me, there's a lot of other things that could just as easily be put upon here. But it really reminds me of, like I say, with people with the UFO sightings. You know, I saw a flying saucer. Flying saucer was a misinterpretation by one person, one reporter, writing down their story that was being told to them by Kenneth Arnold when he saw his flying objects. And he said they were boomerang shaped and they flew as if you were skipping a saucer or a stone, is what most people know how to skip across water. If you would take a saucer and then flick, I guess they used to throw their saucers instead of stones, you know, across like a river. If you skip a rock across water, it goes bip, 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 bip. And he said that is what these boomerangs were flying like. They were going up and down as if they were skipping across water. And that was misinterpreted by one person into saying that Kenneth Arnold saw flying saucers. Then all of a sudden, everyone was seeing these, you know, round, circular, cylindrical, rhombus-style, saucery-looking things that looked like, you know, the saucer that you put under your cup. People were seeing these saucers everywhere. They were seeing something that was just a literal misinterpretation by someone that wasn't listening properly. And that is what happens with most of these fragments of the Bible. They don't even question, why is this double entendre only work in Greek if, you know, Jesus spoke Aramaic? They don't question anything. They just take these bits off. They say, oh, you have to be born again. Okay, I'm born again. I'm born again. Here I am, Jesus. I don't want to go to hell. The rapture, I spoke about that last episode and in previous episodes. You know, no one talks about the fact that you have to be a virgin man and never swallowed yourself with women. And there's only going to be 144,000 Jews, you know, that get lifted up while things happen down below and then the kingdom comes to earth. There's nothing about, you know, this whole rapture business that so many of these Left Behind series books made millions and millions of dollars for these authors. So there's none of this business about being born again. Remember, Mark 16:16, whoever believes and is baptized will be saved, but whoever does not believe will be condemned. So why are we being judged? What are we being judged on, whether we believe or not? That's not much of a judgment. I don't know why you would need a judge to decide that or not. I mean, either you believe or you don't. It's a simple yes or no tick box, in my opinion. Oh, I only have one thing I can say to all this. We'll have to talk about speaking in tongues one day. Because that's another wasp's nest that people really can't get it. I mean, even Paul didn't even know what he was talking about. He changed his mind from time to time. Originally, speaking in tongues meant that you would preach to people in their native language. So that they can understand you, you know. And when Paul wrote about speaking in tongues, he said that only three people should speak in tongues at one time, and you need an interpreter there to tell everybody else, you know, what they're saying. If you don't have an interpreter there, then don't do it in church. Only speak in tongues to your God, because that's what God understands. And speaking in tongues is a sign to the non-believers. Evidently, this is supposed to convince us that, oh my gosh, God is really with you because you're speaking in tongues. Whereas prophecy was for the believer. So anybody that, any evangelist that gets on there and he's going along and or she's going along and all of a sudden, you know, they're just they're full of something. I'm not sure if it's the Holy Spirit. Full of the holy shit, I guess. But I do think it's kind of important, and I sort of feel like I'm full of poop today too, because I thought, hey, this is going to be great. I'm going to, you know, talk about being born again, not really being in the Bible, just like many things that are quite popular with today's Christianity aren't in the Bible. And as it turned out, the payoff wasn't so great. But I think it is important to notice that, that, you know, it even said in there that the flesh cannot produce spirit, you know. And yet, that's exactly what we think we can do. We think that we have this eternal soul that can somehow do this, that, or the other. And some people don't believe that. I mean, not all Christians believe they have an eternal soul. Some people believe that it's a gift. But we even have to look at... I really want to get in... I would love to get in... I'm sorry, I'm flumbling today. Yeah, I have a lot on my mind, no doubt about it. Other things, no doubt about it. But, you know, I would really love to get into more about this whole idea of why we even think that there's ever this preacher Jesus. Which Jesus? Let's talk about when this real person, and why is his name Jesus? We say Jesus, which is sort of a Hellenistic Greek interpretation of the Hebrew Aramaic for Yeshua. Yeshua means Yahweh delivers, or Yahweh rescues, or salvation, or, you know, our salvation, our deliverer. But that didn't happen, you know. And then, of course, you know, his last name wasn't Christ, of course. We don't know. There's no mention of a last name. Christ is more to mean Messiah. What Messiah? The messianic attributes of Jesus had to be retrofitted, had to be reevaluated. When Jesus died and was crucified, then they said, well, that must be what the Messiah was going to have to do. He was going to have to suffer and die for our sins, because that's what happened. This was not a messianic prophecy. This is not the person that was going to come and save, to elevate Israel above all else, eliminate diseases, exorcise demons, and all the other messianic prophecies, the return of the Davidic king. And some say, well, man, it's going to happen when he comes the second time. Well, that's not anywhere in the Bible about a second coming. That just has to be, you know, that just has to be excuses, apologetics that go into there. So we come into a whole lot of problems when we're talking about Jesus, just by his name. Some say that, you know, he wasn't given the name Jesus until he was exalted in heaven after he died. Well, then that's a problem, because we're talking about this guy that, you know, walked around Bethlehem and all these other places and Jerusalem and rode in on. And that's, you know, we have the problem about the riding the donkey. When did he upturn the carts? Did he do that at the beginning of his ministry? Did he do it at the end of it? And what about his ministry? Like I mentioned before, Paul, the founder of Christianity, the guy that got the ball rolling, he doesn't talk about Jesus going around preaching in a ministry anywhere at all. There was no record of a historical Jesus in Paul's writings. As far as, you know, an earthly ministry, it was as if it never existed. And don't say, oh, they didn't want to repeat, because the Bible repeats all the time, and that's why we have a lot of the problems with the inaccuracies, with the contradictions, as far as, you know, when did Jesus go in and upset the money changers' carts? Did he do that at the beginning of his ministry or at the end of his ministry? That is a big problem. That's not something that someone just remembers wrong. You know what I mean? Either that was the reason that he got arrested, or it wasn't. He did it a long time before he got arrested, when he was just starting out. You can't really see that two different ways. There's no doubt about it. I really need to, of course, do some more research to be able to speak more intelligently on this. And maybe I could try to get someone on the show that actually put more of their life into this. And perhaps I've dwelled on it far too long. But one thing is for certain, it definitely is not easy. It's not in the book. You know, it's in the book. It's not. It's not in the book. And if it is in the book, it's quite confusing and not what people tell you it is. So I recommend that you try to get to the bottom of this. This is interesting to you, or a little neat mystery. And it once again boils down to, why all the drama, God? Why all the drama? To me, it boggles the mind. It boggles my mind. How ungodlike existence is. And I thank God for that. Because if there was some sort of divine, intelligent, all-powerful thing behind all of this, it would be incredibly depressing, because the thing would be a complete sadist. And just pathetic. Really. It should be ashamed of itself. It'd be horrible to think that there was actually some type of intelligence behind all that. Much better living in a natural world that plays itself out by a set of natural laws that don't govern our ability to make bad decisions, good decisions, indifferent decisions. And really, I mean, what is a bad decision? It's probably some sort of a neutral decision that can have consequences that either favor us or we find unfavorable. But yeah, we can interpret it. We could change it around. That's an amazing thing about where we have gotten with this brain, this organism, this mechanism. It's an amazing thing, and it's something that we should be happy about. I'm all depressed because of this talk. I mean, it's just so sad that this father of Israel, this very tribalistic, localized desert god, has such an influence to this day over where we really want to be. You know, we should really be aspiring to be better than we are right now, better, further along than we are. And thankfully, there are those individuals that are forward thinkers, that are trying to utilize the hard work, the elbow grease, the achievements that we have made as a species, the human race. Fortunately, people are behind the scenes trying to make these things happen. And what an interesting time it is. How much further could it be along if there wasn't this ridiculous arguments and nitpicking? And it's, you don't even need. That's probably why I'm so depressed, because it's like, you know what? I just took a magnifying glass to this trife that didn't even need further exploration. It's so trivial. It's so meaningless. It's so depraved of anything intelligent. It's sort of like I'm just getting sucked into this. Same game that these. I don't want it to become Wiggly versus Bronze Age mind. You know, Bronze Age man mind. There's so much to celebrate in this world. It's. I guess things don't always turn out the way that we like them to. Hey, the sweet with the sour, bitter and the sweet. Well, we are on the 12th day of January, January, the first month of 2010, and this is the month I have put aside to do music, and so far, of course, as you've guessed it, no music has been created, or I've thought about it, I've been planning, so the planning's good. It's been really cold in here. I have been trying to get my ticklers, trying to pluck the magic twanger, trying to get my diddle fingers all back into shape, and they've been cramping up. I've been cramping up all over the place lately. I don't know if I haven't been drinking enough or what, but I need to try to really make sure I'm getting enough liquids, because I've really been cramping. Like, anytime I stretch or yawn, it's like, ow! Hey, how about John Cena naming all the players and Mike Tyson's punch-out for the NES? I got to get him on We Talk Games. There's a guy that I think really knows his games. And I'd like to get him on there. That'd be a good guest. I just noticed that Fix Keir came out from Noise Industry for my one of these Power Effect FX Factories key plugins. And this has me really jonesed up to give this a shot in, because I have a horrible time trying to key us out for the go-go. I don't know what it is, if it's the camera frame rate or what. I've been trying to isolate it, but it's been rough. So I have things tugging me from all directions, and I feel like I put on a terrible poopy show today. I feel like I just took a turd. And by the way, that reminds me, I think I better go take an angle and wipe my curt. Speaking of TNA, now I'm done speaking of TNA. TNA, the big 3-hour spectacular, the big Monday night battle for last week's ratings, came off to me more than anything like a group of people getting together that believe their own hype. And I think that's what we get a lot of in today's world, is when people forget and they start believing their own hype. And that's when the trouble begins. That's the beginning of some of the woes of this world. But believe me, there are good people out there, you know, like AJ Styles and Kurt Angle. They put on a hell of a performance. And then when Hogan hit the stage right after the match, I half expected Bischoff and a third judge to come out and continue along Hogan's line. You did a great job, brother. Now, you didn't really sell as much as you should have, but you just put the other guy over all right there. And the rest of the celebrity, it really felt like the celebrity fat farm, you know, ending there after that phenomenal match. No pun intended, none taken. And speaking of modern mythology, let's take a look at the series finale of the Battlestar Galactica. Oh, now, if you haven't seen Battlestar Galactica, and I'm going to try to make it spoiler-free. If you haven't seen Battlestar Galactica, number one, the new series from the 90-200s, from the 200s, if you haven't seen that, you are missing out on one of the greatest television happenings of ever. I honestly can say that Battlestar Galactica, and let me just get when that started, what was that, 2004 to 2009. I guess the miniseries happened in 2003. And then a prequel series will be aired this year sometime, if Wikipedia is to be believed. Although, I got to tell you, I don't think we'll ever recapture what happened in the series from 2004 to 2009. That is really, no fooling, some of the most compelling television I've seen on television. Especially, I'm not the biggest sci-fi fan. I like a lot of sci-fi movies. I recently started rewatching the Terminator series and a couple other sci-fi gimmicks that I don't readily recall offhand. But Battlestar, without a doubt, Chiz and I mean, male, female, whatever type of background, I think that you're going to like this, especially Andrea Gines. They love this, as well as other things I can't think of right now, anything clever. I'm blown out today. I'm blown out. Let's face it, I'm depressed now. You never know what can happen on one of these shows, I guess. You never know where things are going to go. But let's just revisit this very, very briefly. I will tell you, I'm going to have this out in under 3 minutes, I believe. I rewatched the series finale, and this was back when I said I was going to do it. What was that, like 2 or 3 months ago? But I did rewatch it, and first of all, the final episode was about 4 episodes crammed into one. You could have easily made four episodes, maybe even 5. Easily made 4 episodes out of that, not only just in story, but in the roles of each one of the characters. Now, I will reiterate that I think each one of the characters of this series completely fulfilled their role of how the writers wanted these characters to be portrayed. I think they were all true to themselves. I don't think any of the characters broke out of what they were, how they were always portrayed, and what their potential. I think they all realize their potential. I think that the reason I was so upset by it initially was because of the one point where Trace just completely vanished. And that sort of blew the whole, are we going for mythological or are we going for scientific? I think if Thrace would have, I think if the pullback would have been just taken a few seconds longer, I think that everyone that was looking at Battlestar to be a scientific, a skeptic, a logical series as opposed to the original mythical 1980s series. I think if the pullback would have just taken a little bit more time, or I guess it started actually in 78, I think, the original series. I think if that would have occurred, just been a little bit longer before the drawback, I think we all would have been okay. if we were more rational minded, then we could have been, just like with the movie The Skeptic, you know. I think they did enough in The Skeptic to keep the balance all there for no matter what type of belief system you want to have. But I think in Battlestar, they really blew it out. And they really made it all mythical. And that's fine. Initially, I was just very disappointed about it. But now, looking back on it, if that's the story that wanted to be told, a mythical story, a new mythology, I'm all cool with that. I mean, let's face it. The 1978 series was based, this is sort of like a big circle, you know? It's like we base the 1978 series on mythology, mostly dealing with Egyptian mythology, and you have the whole searching for a mythical place, Earth, that we've heard about, and that's brought into the new series as well. So it's sort of like a whole full circle, and like I said, now I'm okay with it. And initially I was bothered by it, but when I rewatched the series, I think if you were left a little flat by the season finale, I think if you rewatch it, especially now so far separated from when it occurred, I think you'll be cool with it. Because it's just, like I said, so much happened. There were four episodes in one episode. And you really forget how good those other three episodes were. I would go so far as to say 3 3/4 episodes. The very end, you know, once again, we're now into angels and things like this. So that was also, you know, off-putting to me. Someone that doesn't want Ghost Whisperer. You know, I don't watch Ghost Whisperer. There's a reason I don't watch Ghost Whisperer, because it annoys me. So that's why I got annoyed with this series finale. But going back and seeing, because you have to realize that last episode, we not only got the finale, how everything turns out, we got our mythological reveal, but we also got a prequel. You know, we got a prequel going on in here as well, and another little episode thrown in as well, I think. So we really got a lot of stuff. They had a lot of loose ends to tie up, and they did it all in one episode, as well as giving us bonus footage, insight to the characters, insight to the origins of relationships and things like this. So all in all, I have to look back on it with kind goggles, no doubt about it. And I'm all cool with the writers and the creators wanting to really blow out the mythology in there. And that's all fine. And they still kept it tied in with science. I mean, let's face it, you know, especially the very ending. The very ending is definitely moving, and how, you know, we have that tie-in with the certain things. Especially something very close to my heart. In fact, that's what I should have just spent this entire episode talking about, is the things that are dancing at the end of the first, at the end of Battlestar Galactica. I should have just did that whole thing. Because if you look at my wish list, I now have a $5,000 Hello Kitty on my personal wish list. Now, you would have to look that up by, you know, searching wish list for Wiggly on the Amazon. And then you will see my $5,000 Hello Kitty that I would love to have. And I got to tell you, because it's the first thing that I've seen recently that got me the closest to my original Max Steel. I loved my Max Steel. I've been pining over the photos I took of Max before I threw him in a dumpster. Max Steel was all taken apart, all kinds of taken apart. before, you know, since I bought them in the early 80s, I guess, or mid 80s, whenever that was, probably around 84, I think, actually. Well, I loved my Max Steel from Ideal. It was about 4 foot high, and it was the best robot I ever had. And even to this day, I don't see robots that are really as cool as everything that Max Steel could do. And that's what led to his demise, because it was just way too ahead of its time. I mean, it had speech synthesis. It had remote control. It had programmability. It had so much that you would think that it was made yesterday and not, you know, what are we at now? 10? 30 years ago, almost. So it's pretty amazing what it did, and that's why it only lasted. I think I only had him like a little over 2 weeks, and he was broken. But it was some of the most fun 2 weeks of my life, I think. That was really a great robot. And this Hello Kitty is pretty much the closest thing since then. Although it can't even move around. It just sits there. But I think just in the personality that it portrays. There's other really neat robots as well that are out. They're all pretty expensive. And there's a new robot dog competitor to the Aibo. It sort of took off where the Aibo stopped. I don't know why they stopped Aibos. I don't know what's, you know, Sony is a bizarre creature to me. But they did indeed stop producing Aibos, and this new Bibo or whatever it's called out of, I don't know, Denmark or somewhere else like that. It looks very, very interesting. So that's all cool. Tech talk. You care about these robots because they're awesome. And the little Spuds McKenzie looking robot dog, I think that's really cool as well. And it can dance a lot better than the original Aibo could, even with the modified Aibo software choreography to pre-existing songs. Oh, there's so much to talk about in the world of robots, friends. There's a lot to talk about. I could do a whole show. I should have done a whole show. That's it. I'm scrapping the show. No, I'm not. Let's get out of it gracefully. Let's go out with fans of Jimmy Century. Remember Simon Stinger? Yeah, that's them. That's Victor and Alicia. And this is Going to Hell. I think I'm able to play them. Boy, I hope so. I think that Alicia said I could always play if I want to play. Going to Hell. Might as well. Might as well go to hell. I'm Wiggly. I hope I did all right. Who knows? A Wiggly World. Bye now.